Everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller Podcast for the 21st day of March 2019, the first full day of spring. Somehow, for some weird reason, at like 5:58, it became spring yesterday in the evening, but now it's the first full day of spring. Whatever. Hopefully it'll just get nice weather. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for sending me emails. All of it, the feedback, the spreading of the show is all because of you, and I appreciate the hell out of it. I ask you is to tell 300 people per day. New people, different people every day. Now, thank you for spreading the word. We only grow because of you, and I appreciate the hell out of it. We got a lot of stuff to get to. So much ground to cover. They always say, and this was true when I did radio for 4 years and managed to escape, they try to tell you, and this is true, if you listen to a lot of shows, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, I imagine it's the same. I don't really listen to, I listen to Adam Carolla podcasts, but that's about it. Don't, if you know something's going to piss off your audience, don't do it. Don't say it. Find another way to do it. Find another way to say it. Be creative, or just don't address the topic. And you hear that a lot. You'll hear a lot of hosts, either they stick to their script, there really are some people who just read scripts, or they stick to their wheelhouse and they ignore other stories that are going on in the world. Because if they talk about what they really think about certain issues, some big stories of the day, they run risk of angering people. And as sad as this is a numbers game. The podcasting business is every bit a numbers game as radio is. I was never good at playing along with the game. When I was given the opportunity to keep doing radio, all I had to do was, you know, local focus. Local focus didn't interest me. I didn't want to do it. I didn't like the people either, but that's beside the point. So they tell you don't deliberately anger your audience. Well, I find that the best way, the easiest way, the fastest way, and a really justifiable way to anger your audience is to lie to them, is to pretend, is to be full of crap just because they want to hear it. They want to hear the good news. They want to hear the specific spin on a story. They want to hear whatever. They want you to cheer their heroes and jeer their enemies. I just can't do that. I've always had a philosophy that it's best to tell the truth, if only for the simple fact that it's an easier story to remember. If that's true in life and your relationships, if you're just going to lie to people, you find that you're telling different lies to different people. And guess what? They'll talk and they'll figure it out. Or you'll forget which lie you told which person. And then you'll get confused and people will start to think, well, that person's full of crap. Maybe they won't immediately call you out, but they'll definitely look at you a little differently and probably start to pull back. If you just tell the truth, no matter how ridiculous it is, no matter how bad it makes you look. I mean, for God's sakes, I told the story on this show, a couple months ago now, about how I pooped in a box when I worked at Best Buy to prove a point. Not exactly my proudest moment, and it kind of was one of my personal proudest moments, because I stuck to my word. But in general, I could see how somebody would look at me and go, ew, what? But I think it made a point. So it's much easier to remember what you've told people if you just tell people the truth. And it's much, I find that as much as I anger anybody with my opinion, they at least appreciate the fact that I'm not trying to blow smoke up their butts. And there are some people out there on the right and the left that you could get colon cancer from all the smoke they're blowing up your butt. They want to cheerlead. They want to just tell you what you want to hear because you'll go back to it. They want to be your favorite restaurant with your favorite meal. And they want you to eat it every day. And if they deviate from that, they're afraid that you're not going to go back to that restaurant and order that plate of spaghetti or whatever. That's just not me. So I'm going to give you advance warning that there's a good chance that I am going to anger you on today's show with my opinion. I might not. I don't know. Let's be honest. We don't really know each other all that well. We're still getting to know each other. From your emails and things, some of you are definitely going to be angered by my opinion. But I believe it. I believe it to be true, and I will back it up and justify it. And I'll read your emails, and I'll respond to your emails, and maybe I'll read some of your emails on the show tomorrow if you really make a good point. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and I'll look into it. I'll consider your opinion. But you're not in my basement right now. Two cats are. Three cats are. They're all three here, and about 10 fish. They're not going to chime in, and so I'm not going to get immediate feedback on this. But I have to say that the President of the United States is, if he loses re-election in 2020, it will be because of Donald Trump. That is, he's his own worst enemy. The best thing he has going for him, aside from the booming economy, is the fact that Democrats cannot act remotely sane or like they like this country. Forget love this country, that they like this country. They have to campaign on this is a racist country, this is a sexist country, this is an Islamophobic country, this is a xenophobic country, this is a transphobic country, this is a whatever, triskaidekaphobic country. Just nonstop, this is a horrible country, and they need to get power to force us to change away from our hateful ways. Meanwhile, most of us are going about their lives, and there is no wave of hate except for on college campuses and other places where liberals congregate and concentrate power. In the face of that, the re-election prospects of Donald Trump are exceedingly high. And yesterday, in a speech in Ohio, the president, being his own worst enemy, reared his head again. I get that Donald Trump is a counterpuncher. You look at who he's attacked, who he's gotten in the Twitter wars or the flame wars with or whatever, even Kellyanne Conway's pudgy husband. It's always him hitting back. He's a counterpuncher. But you can't really hit back against a dead guy. There's punching down, and then there's punching the ground under which somebody is buried. And that is where Donald Trump went yesterday with no rationale for it. Mr. President, I know you're not listening, but I'll say it anyway to the audience. You won. John McCain is dead. You're President of the United States. You don't ever have to mention him again, and he will soon be forgotten. Oh, the media will try to keep him alive, but you breathe more life into his past existence than his existence had in its last 6 months. By taking to the stage in Ohio and making a speech about great economic news into a speech about John McCain, who died 7 months ago, you are losing people. Not everybody. I know there are people listening right now who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, disagree with me vehemently. You're free to do that. You're probably mad at me, and maybe you're going to hit stop on this episode because of this, and maybe you'll unsubscribe. I don't know. But I have to tell you what I think and why I think it, and it's pretty basic. He's attacking a dead guy most Americans have forgotten about. Just a simple fact of nature. Most of us will be forgotten no matter how long we live and no matter what we do in our lives. Very few of us will be remembered past the lifespan of our family and friends. To be perfectly honest with you, it's going to be depressing as hell if you really sat around and thought about it on a Friday night with a bottle of whiskey. You'll probably, you know, have some really dark thoughts. Don't go there. It's just the way it is. Makes you want to do something more while you're alive so you can maybe buck the trend. And you can. But John McCain being dead and being attacked by the President of the United States. Still, no matter how dumb and awful what John McCain did while he was alive, makes the president look smaller. Before I get into this any further, in case you haven't heard what he said yesterday in Ohio, I have three clips I want to play for you, because this really was supposed to be about good economic news in the country. There really is great economic news in the country. Manufacturing, that Barack Obama told us would never return, has returned with a vengeance. You wouldn't know it from the news coverage yesterday, because Donald Trump gave the liberal media and even the legitimate media reasons not to talk about it. The only show I watch regularly on Fox News is Special Report. I try to make a point of watching at least the first half an hour of Special Report with Bret Baier, because that's when they actually do news. And they do news better than any other straight news program out there, because they actually do the news. They tell you things. They're not giving you their opinion. And they cover a lot of things. The panel, most of the time, I can do without it. I used to love it. Now it's a whole bunch of people whose opinions I don't need to hear, not journalists. But even Bret Baier led off the program with John McCain's remark, or with Donald Trump's remarks about John McCain. I don't know if the president realizes yet the full power of the bully pulpit and the full power of the presidency. I really don't. Because he derailed his own train yesterday. And I don't think he would have done that if he was thinking clearly, if he was fully aware of it. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's listen to the first clip of what the president said.
A lot of people are asking, because they love me, and they ask me about a man named John McCain. And if you want that to tell you about, should I or not? Yes? Yes? So I have to be honest, I've never liked them much. Hasn't been for me. I've really probably never will. But there are certain reasons for it, and I'll tell you. And I do this to save a little time with the press later on. John McCain received a fake and phony dossier. Do you hear about the dossier? It was paid for by crooked Hillary, right? And John McCain got it. He got it. And what did he do? Didn't call me. He turned it over to the FBI, hoping to put me in jeopardy. And that's not the nicest thing to do.
All of what the president said there is true, but it being true is irrelevant, because everybody hearing this knows that John McCain is dead. What John McCain did while he was alive, he was not Adolf Hitler. He was not certainly not the most conservative senator. His signature piece of legislation, his signature accomplishment in the United States Senate, aside from supporting wars, was McCain-Feingold, which severely limited speech when it came to campaigns. He was bitter that he lost the 2000 campaign, and he thought it was unfair, and he wanted to get money out of politics. It was declared largely unconstitutional, so, you know, his biggest accomplishment was shot down by the Supreme Court. Still, and I can't stress this enough, he is dead. I don't know who these people who are asking him about John McCain. Apparently people who he said love him ask him about John McCain. I'm not really sure about that. But just because somebody asks you something doesn't mean you have to answer. And just because somebody asks you something doesn't mean you have to incorporate it into a 5-minute tangent in a speech where you're there to tout the economy. There was a very good message for the president to sell, to push yesterday. And he kneecapped himself with talk about John McCain. If you really must talk about John McCain, there are plenty of ways to talk about John McCain that don't seem like taking cheap shots at a dead man. And again, I know I'm going to get the emails. I know John McCain was this, John McCain was that, John McCain. I will likely agree with you about John McCain was, but the operative part of that sentence is the word was, not is, not present tense, past tense. He is gone. It's unseemly to attack somebody who's dead on a personal level. For his votes, it's fair game, and that will be fair game for all time. You can criticize him for the votes he took, especially the Obamacare repeal and replace vote. You want to go after him for that and be critical in speeches? If it weren't for someone like John McCain, we wouldn't have had Obama. That's fine. That's not what the president is doing here. It doesn't take 5 minutes to do that. I just did it in about 7 seconds. The president is still angry at John McCain about things that he should be angry about John McCain over, but they are personal, largely, and petty. There are plenty of other people involved in the dossier and in this scam Russia investigation to be angry at. John McCain was not the acorn from which the mighty oak grew. He was one of many involved. And the best revenge is vindication, which by all indications, the president will ultimately be vindicated by Robert Mueller. The ultimate best revenge is living well. And again, John McCain is dead. He's gone. So you're living, Mr. President. You're already ahead of the curve. And you're president of the United States. It just makes the office and you, him, Donald Trump, seem small to carry around this anger. I'm all for attacking opponents and for counterattacking and hitting back twice as hard, but John McCain hasn't taken a swing at anybody in 7 months. The president wasn't done. Again, this was 4 minutes long. I'm not going to play the whole thing. I got like a minute and a half's worth of clips, but he continued about McCain.
John McCain campaigned for years to repeal and replace Obamacare, for years, in Arizona, great state. I love the people of Arizona. But he campaigned for years for repeal and replace. So did Rob, so did a lot of senators. When he finally had the chance to do it, he voted against repeal and replace. He voted against at 2 o'clock in the morning. Remember, thumbs down. We said, what the hell happened? He said 2 hours before he was voting to repeal and replace, and he went thumbs down. Badly hurting the Republican Party, badly hurting our nation.
Again, all true. All true. John McCain did that. I was watching live on C-SPAN at early in the morning because I'm a nerd and an insomniac like that. Came out, thumbs down, that was it. That was the end of repeal and replace. John McCain killed it. He lost a lot of respect from a lot of people, myself included, because of that, and there wasn't a whole lot of respect left for John McCain. But again, and I cannot stress this enough, John McCain is dead. He's not hitting back at someone. He's hitting the ground on someone's grave. There are better ways to make this case that don't involve attacking a dead man, and it makes the president seems small. One last clip, and this is the one that really did the damage, because he's kind of said what he said already before. He shouldn't have said it before. He shouldn't have said it in this situation. And you can hear from the crowd, the non-reaction from the crowd, that they're kind of sitting there. This was not the message they were expecting. This was not what they thought they were going to hear. And they're a little bit shocked, because I believe it was a military crowd, or heavily formerly military. They're building tanks now. They're building Abrams tanks. And so these people are very, very pro-military. John McCain, for all of his flaws, and there are a lot of flaws from his time in the Senate and in his personal life, he was a supporter of the military, a strong supporter of the military, and the guy could not even scratch his own head because he had had his arms broken so many times while he was spending time in the Hanoi Hilton for 6 years as a prisoner of war. Nobody would doubt that John McCain was pro-military. But this last bit was too much, I think, and this is what really made the story. It's not beyond repair. It's not damaging. It's just an example of the president unnecessarily stepping on his own message. And this is where he gets into the cheap shot, where he talks about the funeral of John McCain.
I endorsed him at his request, and I gave him the kind of funeral that he wanted, which as president, I had to approve. I don't care about this. I didn't get thank you. That's okay. We sent him on the way, but I wasn't a fan of John McCain.
Why bring that up? Why mention that at all? I had to approve it. They didn't thank me. He didn't, you know, he, Donald Trump was not invited, was explicitly not invited. It was McCain's parting cheap shot. But again, Donald Trump won. Donald Trump is president of the United States. And more importantly, Donald Trump is alive. John McCain is dead. If it's, there comes a point when you have to let it go, when you should let it go, when it becomes a hindrance to not let it go, and you begin to damage yourself. You've got Democrats running around calling for the abolition of the Electoral College, for packing the Supreme Court, for lowering the voting age to 16, for universal health care, for free college, for free child care, for $1,000 a month in just free money to people, all kinds of absolute insanity, regulations, higher taxes, things that would destroy the economy that is booming right now. You should be talking about the booming economy, and he should be talking about, I'm talking like I'm talking to the president. I know he's not listening, but he should be talking like he's counteracting all of this. You can draw massive contrasts between what you are doing and what they want to do. Things are really good right now. We have a million more jobs than there are people in need of a job and looking for a job in this country. That is a massive success. Wages are rising for the first time in a decade or more. And you're talking about a dead guy who's been dead for 7 months. No matter how screwed up what he did was, and not inviting you to, making sure explicitly not inviting you to the funeral, was in poor taste, that reflected poorly on John McCain. Just like this reflects poorly on the president. I know, I can already feel the emails coming in saying, well, John McCain was this. Yes, John McCain was a lot of things. But again, I return to the basic fact that John McCain is dead. Donald Trump won. You don't need to urinate on his grave. You've won. Be president. Go forward. Push your agenda. Get reelected. That should be your focus. In that speech yesterday, the economic news is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Nobody remembers it. It wasn't played anywhere. It's over and it's done. It was all about the 4.5 minutes that he spent dancing on John McCain's grave, kicking dirt on it. That's not going to get him reelected. No votes were won yesterday. Some may well have been lost, because there are some people, older Americans, who look at that and are as very distasteful. And they just, I want better from my president. We can get better from this president. Donald Trump has been better on so many occasions. And every once in a while, he backslides into this pettiness. And it does him a major disservice. And it does him damage. Again, the opponents are insane. They are bat crap crazy. They are threatening our liberties gleefully, and crowds cheer them. They're raising a ton of money, and about half the country wants these people to win, to be president. In order to protect his legacy, President Trump should be doing everything he can to advance the ball in his reelection. His biggest legislative accomplishment is the tax cuts and reform, which helped lead to this booming economy, along with the regulatory repeals. If he loses in 2020, there is a better than average chance that Republicans could lose the Senate. Slim, but it's better than average. And all of his legislative accomplishments and regulatory rollbacks will be overturned, and much worse would come back in their place. They, Democrats, just like the way that Donald Trump and the Republicans managed to wipe most of Barack Obama's legacy away, except for Obamacare. They got us out of the Paris Accords. They got us out of the Iran deal. They've changed our posture in so many different ways, in a foreign policy way. They have erased the horrible 8 years of the Obama economy. Just like all of that in 2 years was pretty much wiped away. The same can be done to Donald Trump at this point. And it won't be because of his actions being failures, his policies being failures. It will be because the Democrats will be able to make this election about things other than his policies. And every time Donald Trump does something like this, it allows Democrats to talk about the negative aspects that the majority of Americans don't like about Donald Trump. It's not that he's not a fighter. People like that he's a fighter. It's when you're punching a dead guy that it's a problem, that it's unseemly. Like I said, the best thing Donald Trump has going for him, aside from the economy, is that the Democrats are incapable of acting sane. But sooner or later, one of them has got to break out of that. Maybe they take their meds or whatever, and it clicks in, and they start acting like the adult in the room. And when you're looking for a leader, people do tend to gravitate towards the adult in the room. As long as they're not saying, I want free this, free that, socialized everything, and this, that, and the other thing. So it really depends on who the Democrats nominate. But there is a possibility, slim as it may seem, that the Democrats nominate somebody who is actually sane. Because right now their field is competing for the loons, the uber left. There is a lane for somebody to get about 20% of the vote and skate through the early states and find themselves having a clear path to the nomination, while the Bernies and the Betos and the Warrens and the Harrises all promise free everything and free this, and Cory Booker's over there talking to himself in a straitjacket, promising free everything, free imaginary friends. Somebody could come in and be the adult in the room, and they could win the nomination with, you know, 20% in the early states, because you're going to have 20 to 30 people on the ballot out there in Iowa and New Hampshire. Donald Trump has to be aware of that. He has the most powerful weapon known to man in the political world, and that is the office of the President of the United States. The bully pulpit is amazing. You can command the news cycle. Everything you say is newsworthy. Some things are more newsworthy than others. And all the good economic news and the record number of manufacturing jobs was overshadowed. How much of great economic news and you can feel a little more secure tonight in your economic future if you're a blue-collar worker in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, any of those swing states? You can breathe a little easier. The economy is booming. Jobs are being created. Some factories are closing, but other factories, more factories are opening. You should feel comfort in that if you're in that situation. And instead, you likely didn't hear that message. You heard the President of the United States going after a dead man. And by the way, the dead man's daughter, who I think she's in her 30s, is, you know, popular. She's on The View. She's responding. She's saying nasty and negative things and stupid things. Meghan McCain isn't the brightest person in the world, but she's also somebody who lost their father. And that elicits sympathy from people, not from hardcore on either side, but from the middle. And the battle is always over the middle. Donald Trump needs to stop doing damage to himself. The left is damaging themselves. That elevates Donald Trump. That elevates the president. And he knocks himself down a few pegs yesterday. I think it was a horrible strategic error yesterday. And look, I get it. I watched the McCain funeral for the purposes of this show. I don't think I use anything of it, but I wanted to see what people would say. I never tell anybody how to mourn, and certainly not at the time, but I looked at that, and that was a 5-day spectacle that, you know, a president wouldn't get. It doesn't seem like a president would get that. But that's what John McCain wanted. The president approved it. He would have been chastised if he hadn't approved it. It says something about McCain's arrogance that he wanted it and his bitterness that he didn't want the president to be there. That's all fine, well, and good. Again, I go back to the same mantra. At the end of the day, Donald Trump is president and John McCain is dead. It's time for the president to recognize that and let that feud go. You won. There are plenty of other feuds out there. There's the Adam Schiff's. There's the MSNBC. There's the CNN. You don't have to get into a fight with a dead man. Send all complaint emails to Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I just know that, I get it. They're going to be coming in by the busload. That's fine. Be mad at me. I'm sure that there's another podcast host out there who will tell you exactly what you want to hear if you're mad at me over that. But I don't think they're being honest with you. I think that they're telling you what they want to hear. So, if nothing else, I get points for honesty. Okay, there is other news out there that I want to get to, but I had to get that off my chest. Oh, by the way, on tomorrow's show, the weekly interview is with Tim Carney about his new book, Alienated America. It's a really interesting conversation. You're not going to want to miss that. And we do get some books signed at the end. So I'll be talking about how we're going to give them away next week. Don't start emailing me about that because I will lose those emails. I just know I will. I've been getting too many emails lately. But keep sending them. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying for me to keep track of them at this point, this early would be too much. All right, other news. The situation over in New Zealand is being exploited by the left here in this country and in New Zealand. Because everything is exploited by the left. Tragedy is an opportunity, as what was his name? Rahm Emanuel said famously that you never let a good crisis go to waste. It's so sad. But that's where they are. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern? Ardern, yeah. Jacinda Ardern is Prime Minister of New Zealand. 38 years old, and she vowed immediately the day of the terrorist attack that she wanted to ban guns. They wanted to change the gun laws. And oh, liberals in this country were so excited. Finally, there's a leader in the world who will take action to curb gun violence. Now, New Zealand, I'm not that familiar with it. It appears quite often on House Hunters International, which I watch every night. It seems like a nice place. It doesn't strike me as a place with a lot of gun crime. Yet, the Prime Minister immediately went to the progressive playbook. Ban, ban. Now's our opportunity. Pounce, ban. Stand on that pile of bodies and make sure that you make everybody sees them and you ban guns. I guarantee you she came in wanting to ban guns. She wanted gun control. She wanted to, and she was just waiting for her opportunity, just like Democrats in this country do, just like progressives in Australia did, just like progressives in the UK did. They want to ban guns, and they're just waiting for their moment. Well, Jacinda Ardern got her moment. Ardern, I guess. It's Ardern. She got her moment and was praised throughout the world by the media, who hate this country's Second Amendment. They hate your right to keep and bear arms. So yesterday, or I guess today over there, I don't know, wherever the hell they are on the international dateline, she made her announcement of what her policy is going to be. She is banning just about everything and expects the parliament over there to act within the next 10 days. It'd be nice. The cause of liberty and the rejection of collective guilt for individual action, if they rejected it, if they refused to do this. But here is what Jacinda Ardern announced that she is going to push for in the wake of the Christchurch massacre.
Today I'm announcing that New Zealand will ban all military-style semi-automatic weapons. We will also ban all assault rifles. We will ban all high-capacity magazines. We will ban all parts with the ability to convert semi-automatic or any other type of firearm into a military-style semi-automatic weapon. We will ban parts that cause a firearm to generate semi-automatic, automatic, or close to automatic gunfire. In short, every semi-automatic weapon used in the terrorist attack on Friday will be banned in this country.
She's going on down the list. She is checking every single box and checking it twice. Anything? Why don't they ban the car the guy drove in? Why don't they ban Facebook? They're already blocking websites over there. They don't have the First Amendment. This is the difference in most of these countries. They are most of the rest of the world. And I don't think people realize this unless you've actually lived someplace else or studied this. You can visit as a tourist. You can go anywhere you want. You go to the UK, you go to France, you can go to Russia. The odds of you crossing a line, criticizing the government, doing something that is illegal over there, pretty slim. Most, you really have to try to break the laws. It was that one kid in Indonesia who spit on the sidewalk, or no, he graffitied cars, and he got a whole bunch of, he was caned like 16 times or something like that. But you really got to cross the line pretty far as a tourist to really feel the lack of rights and liberties in the rest of the world, unlike here, where you've got a ton of liberties, and they're guaranteed by the Constitution, protected. In the rest of the world, your rights are granted by their government, and they can easily be curtailed by that same government. That's what makes our Constitution so wonderful, so amazing, so brilliantly written. That's why it pisses me off so much when Democrats want to change it. Our government does not grant rights. Despite what the Bernie Sanders and all the lefties say, healthcare should be a right. This should be a right. Free college should be a right. No, government doesn't grant rights. Government is restricted, forbidden from infringing upon our rights. Of course, government sets about trying to find ways to curtail our rights in every way, shape, or form they possibly can. The First Amendment, Democrats always, oh, they love the First Amendment. Not so much the freedom of religion part. Certainly not the ability to petition your government for redress of grievances. They'll demonize lobbyists every chance they get. But a lobbyist is really, it's my definition of a lobbyist is true. It's just an easy way to put it. Somebody who advocates for something with which you disagree. Then you paint them as a lobbyist. If they advocate for something you agree with, well, then they're just an advocate. They're an activist. They're trying to ensure a better world for everybody. But the people on the other side doing the exact same thing are lobbyists, dirty, dirty lobbyists, and their dirty lobbyist money. Well, we're just taking activist money. It's the other side that's taking dirty, dirty lobbyists' money. Well, in the First Amendment on the freedom of religion part, the Democrats, and this really sort of solidified, and this is a point Tim Carney makes tomorrow on the show, because we recorded the interview yesterday, if you can follow that logic. Democrats always say, and Barack Obama started this by saying, well, you got to have the freedom to worship. The First Amendment does not protect the freedom to worship exclusively. It is freedom of religion, to practice your religion, to live your religion. The Nancy Pelosi's and the Chuck Schumer's of the world who say, you know what, go to your church on Sundays and then leave it there on Sundays and then come out and, you know, perform abortions and everything. That's their way of, well, lying to people, quite honestly. Nancy Pelosi is about as Catholic as the Ayatollah is. But she pretends to be. But then she'll tell you, you know, you're free to worship however you like. What if you actually believe how you worship, unlike you, Nancy, and you want to live that way, too? Then suddenly they're not such fans of the First Amendment. Thankfully, the First Amendment is being protected. And the courts are ruling, ultimately, as long as they're not the Ninth Circuit, that you don't have to bake that cake. That you don't have to give up your religious beliefs simply because it's not Sunday. But the Second Amendment is completely different. Democrats hate that. They wrap themselves in the freedom of the press part of the First Amendment, not even the freedom of speech part. College campus speech codes, they got no problem with. Shouting down conservative speakers, they're totally cool with. They'll celebrate it. Mostly they'll just ignore it. because reporting on it would reflect poorly on them. But the Second Amendment, they want nothing to do with. That is not an absolute right. That is not a right at all guaranteed by the Constitution. It's for militia members. You can see right there in the beginning, it says a well-regulated militia. It also says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, not the rights of militia members. So it is an individual right, unequivocally and unambiguously. If you don't like it, try to repeal it. You don't get to ignore it. You don't get to take out your hammer and chisel and chip away at it. Well, they all collectively cheered what happened in New Zealand today. They collectively want that to happen here because they want nothing more than to curtail every single one of your rights. They despise the fact that you have the ability to defend yourself. They despise the fact that you might choose to own a gun for the simple reason that you can. They don't want that. Therefore, they seek to destroy it, and they cheer. Bernie Sanders tweeted out, quote, after he tweeted out what Jacinda Ardern did, "This is what real action to stop gun violence looks like. We must follow New Zealand's lead, take on the NRA, and ban the sale and distribution of assault weapons in the United States." What's an assault weapon? What's a military-style gun? Because, newsflash, military people also use pistols. So, theoretically, if you define it loosely enough, they could be calling for the banning of all guns, the confiscation of guns. Part of the New Zealand plan is a mandatory buyback. It's a mandatory buyback. That is a gun confiscation scheme. It is not a buyback. Buyback is, I'll give you $200 for that rifle. No, I paid $500 for it, and I want it anyway. All right, then here's your $500. No, I don't want to do that. Nope. A mandatory buyback is, here's what I've decided your gun is worth. I'm taking it. By the way, if you don't like it, you're going to go to prison. If you resist me, you're going to go to prison. I have not seen mass shootings or even shootings being an epidemic of any sort whatsoever in New Zealand. Yet one, as horrible as it was, and 50 people were killed, one was all it took for the government to seize power, absolute power, to seize guns back from a people who, by the grace of their government, were granted the right to own guns. That's why our system is so genius. Our system says you're born with these rights. Government can't mess with them. Of course, government tries to, but government can't mess with them. That's the difference. If a government is the grantor of rights, there is no rational explanation, no rational argument against a government rescinding various rights. That's what differentiates the United States from the rest of the world. That's why the Bernie Sanders of the world hate this country. That's why they want to have power in this country so they can make this country like those other countries. It's their scary and dangerous stuff. Speaking of those other countries, you think, well, the UK, they're pretty sane, right? No. They are not. After having massive gun confiscation and banning guns, they're having a bunch of stabbings, particularly in London. They were actually talking about instituting knife bans. That's how insane it got, making sure that you can only have knives of certain sizes. Because, you know, I guess if you're stabbed with a 2-inch knife, it's better than a 3-inch knife or a 4-inch knife. I think it's probably best if you're not stabbed at all, rather than dealing with the reasons for the stabbing, which was largely organized crime and Islamic terrorists that they willingly let into the country, which is part of why the Brexit vote went the way they did. They decided to again ban the inanimate object as if it were a siren calling the sailors to crash themselves on the rocks. Well, over in the UK, they don't have a First Amendment. They sure as hell don't have a Second Amendment. They have an entirely different system of government in which the government decides which rights you're allowed to have, what you're allowed to do, and what you're allowed to say. That guy who goes by the name Count Dankula was sentenced to like a week in prison and a fine for posting a video of a dog putting his paw up. And he was saying that the dog was heiling Hitler. He was put in prison. Now, you think that's insane. That's beyond the pale. That would never happen here, Derek. Does the name Nikula Nikula mean anything to you? Nikula Nikula is the guy who's god-awful stupid video. And it's not god-awful because it was offensive, although it was. I was offended. I'm not Muslim. I was offended by the shoddy filmmaking and poor acting and the horrible green screen work. But Nikula Nikula was the guy who made the video that the Obama administration blamed the Benghazi terrorist attack on in order to be able to campaign for re-election in 2012 by saying there had been no terrorist attacks on my watch. They lied. They had that guy arrested. They had Nikula Nikula arrested. They found a way that he had violated his probation or parole, and he was in jail for a year after that for the crime of creating a YouTube video that the Obama administration found convenient to scapegoat. So don't think it can't happen here. So what am I talking about can't happen here? Over in the UK, there is no freedom of speech. None. You're allowed to say what you want as long as nobody is offended by it. There actually are codes against free speech. You're not allowed to offend people, willingly offend people. It's a hate crime to misgender someone. If somebody is a delusional transvestite or transsexual or whatever the hell it is now that we're allowed to call people, if you misgender them, that could be considered a hate crime. And there was such an incident of this recently. This clip, it's about a minute and a half long, but the whole report is good and it moves along nicely, is from Good Morning Britain. It's their big morning show. Piers Morgan is one of the co-hosts. And a woman was being investigated, a guest on their show was being investigated for a hate crime. The hate crime was using the wrong pronoun to describe a guy who thinks he's a woman. The party of science, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to this.
Because I am standing here this morning outside of police headquarters because one of our guests on the show later on Twitter, who has a boy, who was a son who was born a boy, then transitioned to a girl, they were referred to the wrong pronoun as a he or a boy. That was the debate on Twitter. As a result of that, Susie Green said that she found this actually distressing and spiteful, made a complaint to Surrey Police, who now tell us that they are actually investigating as a hate crime. Hate crime have a maximum prison sentence of anything up to 2 years. This is at a time, of course, when we've been talking about a lot on the programme with rising knife crime around the country, and also violence is soaring in the UK as well. Should the police be prioritising crimes like this?
We're conflating.
No, we're not. We're
sexual
not.
Predator.
It's a row that was first sparked in our studios. Caroline Farrow, a Catholic with conservative views, appeared alongside transgender activist Susie Green, whose daughter Jackie was born a boy. When the cameras stopped rolling, though, the debate soon spilled onto Twitter.
I know this from my own experience.
Yeah, that's fine, but trans girls are girls.
Caroline Farrow allegedly used the wrong pronoun to describe Jackie Green, referring to her perhaps as a boy. And that, she's been told, is a possible hate crime, and now Surrey Police are carrying out an investigation. But in a statement, Caroline Farrow said, "She's put my family through hell, and I don't think she should have pursued it in the first place." We understand that Susie Green now intends to withdraw her complaint, but at the moment, the official investigation continues.
Isn't that ridiculous? Using the wrong quote-unquote pronoun, actually the scientifically correct pronoun, for a trans woman or man, I don't know how the hell it works, started a hate crime investigation that could lead to 2 years in prison. Now it seems like the trans mother, maybe she identifies as a father, who the hell knows, is going to drop the charges. But the fact that they haven't yet, and the fact that it was launched, an investigation was launched in the first place, is insane. And I know you're sitting there and you're going, Derek, but that's the UK. That's not here. The state of California made it a crime that could, depending upon the frequency of the violation, lead to the imprisonment of state nursing home employees who refuse to use the preferred pronoun of trans people who are California residents living in nursing homes. Not making that up. It's in my book. It's also online. You can just Google it and you will find it. So it does happen here. It hasn't been, nobody's been prosecuted yet. It hasn't been challenged in the courts. We'll see what happens if and when it does. But if the Democrats pack the Supreme Court like they want to, we already know that the conclusion will be that you can't do it. That it's perfectly constitutional. You can't use the wrong pronoun. It is a hate crime. And other states will follow California's lead. The UK, you think of, well, they're just like us. They're not like us at all. No country on earth is like us. Our constitution is genius. And that is why Democrats are hell-bent on destroying it by packing the courts so they can get away with absolutely anything and make us like New Zealand, where they can order all of our guns confiscated and ban things they don't like. And like the UK, where if you use the incorrect pronoun, you are declared history's greatest monster and could face up to 2 years in prison. Meanwhile, in the UK, in an abject lesson in intersectionality, the left's latest, the hierarchy, the sliding rule scale of what constitutes a victim and who can be victimized and who can be a perp. And some people just can't be victims. White, straight white men can't possibly be victims of anybody because they're the worst. Well, while you've got the police there cracking down on misgendering as a possible hate crime, over in Birmingham, they have a different situation. They have conflict between gays and Muslims. Who do you think wins that fight? Well, if you take out your handy-dandy intersectional slide rule, and again, I'm telling you, this is this freaking stupid, you see that the Muslims are the bigger victims because the gays are British. They're men and women, and they're white, largely, whereas Muslims are Arabic. And they are Muslim. They got two going for them. They're also, you know, new immigrants. So that's really three. They've got a little trifecta of victimhood going on over there. So on the intersectionality sliding scale, they win every time. This story from the BBC. Four more schools in Birmingham have stopped teaching about LGBT rights following complaints by parents. Lee Trust said it was suspending the No Outsiders program until an agreement with parents was reached. Earlier this month, the Parkfield Community Schools suspended the lessons after protests were held. Campaigner Amir Ahmed said some Muslims felt, quote, victimized by an LGBT group leader, but an LGBT group leader said No Outsiders helped pupils understand it's okay to be different. Well, amongst the refugee and immigrant population of Muslims that have flooded into the UK, amongst many of them, it's not okay to be different. So you have a clash of civilizations. Normally, a normal, rational human being would look at this situation and say, look, you're new here, so I understand that some of the stuff that we do freaks you out, but if you're going to stay here and not, you know, be forced to go back to that shithole you came from, that you fled from for your life, you're going to have to learn to adapt to our ways. We'll give you a learning curve. There's time. There's a long runway here. That's okay. But you're going to have to learn that we do things a little bit differently here. For example, women are allowed to show their heads without being raped or beaten or honor killed. And there are gay people, and you're just going to have to get used to it. See, the weird thing is, in the Muslim world, there's a lot of homosexuality. They just don't talk about it. You hear stories, blood-curdling stories from our soldiers in Afghanistan, for example, that what goes on with young boys over there and some of the men, some of the Afghan men. It's disgusting. But then you get the Mahmoud Ahmadinejad come over here and give a speech at New York University and say there are no gay people in Iran. Yeah, because you've thrown them all off of buildings. So there's a culture clash. Normally, the new people are told, look, you're going to, this is how we do things here. This is going to be your new home. You're going to have to learn to adapt to how we do things here. again, we'll give you a nice little stretch of runway here, but that's just the way the world works. Not anymore, thanks to the progressive left. Now it is whatever was can't be anymore because somebody who's new here and higher ranking on the intersectionality scale is offended by it. You must change your ways. So the idea of teaching students in this UK area of Birmingham that there's nothing wrong with gay people, you shouldn't cut their heads off, you know, just leave them alone. If you don't like it, that's fine, but just keep it to yourself. Leave everybody alone and they'll extend the same courtesy to you is not enough anymore. Can't do it. Because the Muslim community feels threatened by it. They feel, quote, victimized by it. Meanwhile, a woman who's born and raised in the UK is being investigated for a hate crime, for referring to a biological male as a male rather than the delusional chemical imbalance preferred term of female, scientifically inaccurate term of female. And if you think that this isn't going to come here, you just wait. This is going to come everywhere. If the victimhood status of the left is the most prized position you can ever possibly have. And that sliding scale of intersectionality is insanity personified and squared. And it's going to lead to all kinds of hell in this country because they think they can get power out of it because they can. In the final story of the day, go to Twitter, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's, I always jokingly say you have to say her name like that or it's a hate crime, but it's not that far from reality. She's mad. She claims that Fox News hosts just call her Cortez, which they do not. She tweeted, quote, how dare they refuse to say their name, the wrong accent, in response to a guy who said a journalist, I'm sorry, he's not just a guy. His name is Issam Ahmed, and he is a journalist for Agence France-Presse in Washington. Yeah, real journalist. He tweeted out that some pundits dislike it when people of color pronounce their own names correctly. She responded, how dare they refuse to say their names in a wrong accent and not mangle their own family name so that I can feel more comfortable instead of look inside myself and examine why something as small as a person's name makes me uncomfortable in the first place. This is an outrage. Then she continued, by the way, Fox News likes to say my name incorrectly as Cortez, which I can only imagine is because that sounds more stereotypically Hispanic and probably incites more anxiety from them. Pro tip, my last name is not Cortez, just as theirs isn't Ingra or Carl or Han, implicating Laura Ingram, Tucker Carlson, and Sean Hannity. Well, Tom Elliott, the guy who founded and is the editor of Grabian Media, which is a sort of a clearinghouse for clips from cable news. It's a great website. They also transcribe just about everything on cable television. He responded, unsurprisingly, quote, you may be unsurprised to learn that this is untrue. I checked every mention of Cortez on the Ingram angle in March and didn't find it. Didn't find Laura Ingram referring to AOC as Cortez once. On March 3rd, Rabbi Ired Spiro said Cortez and her quartet, but Laura never did. Just checked Sean Hannity, whom she also accused of this ostensible hate crime. Like Laura, Hannity did not refer to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as Cortez once in the month of March. I checked every show. She's mentioned 20 times in one episode, but every time correctly. Unless AOC has something to back up this claim, it would seem she owes apologies to Hannity and Ingram. Randomly accusing people of prejudice is indecent, especially when it will inevitably be used for more boycott fodder. That is exactly why she did it. She is a fascist. She is the worst kind of human being. She will not be called out by the mainstream media for this lie. She will be cheered for this lie. She will be celebrated for this lie. I always joke that you had to say her name that way or it was a hate crime. if she and her fellow travelers, the fascist wing of the Democratic, well, the fascist Democratic Party, get control, get power again in this country, she will make it a hate crime to mispronounce her name or to say her name without the appropriate accent. I love it how she's talking, well, I'm Puerto Rican, and they say it this way, and you got to say the whole thing, blah, blah, blah. I'm a strong Latinx. You grew up in New York, you spoiled little brat. You were born and raised there. Really, it's... I do. Whenever bad things happen to these people, I hate to say it, but again, I have a policy of being honest. I will be happy. They will deserve all the bad things that befall them because they are actively seeking to impose bad things on us for the crime of thinking differently. That is all the time we have for today. Go ahead and send your angry emails to Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And make sure to be back here tomorrow for our weekly interview and another exciting episode. Have a great day.